You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. You've probably driven by the jumble of pink houses on Hyperion and Silver Lake that makes up Casita del Campo. It is a Mexican restaurant that's celebrating 60 years of service this weekend. Well, they're known, of course, for their food, but also for their little underground theater. It's called the Cavern Club that hosts raucous drag shows every month.
I've never met before. They call me Mr. Dan. I've been living down here for 28 years.
These drag shows have been going strong now for more than 20 years and are part of how Casita del Campo has created a welcoming space for all comers in their community. On a recent night, regulars like Esteban Ramos filled the dining room. He says he's been coming here since the early 1980s.
Everyone comes here because it's home. Everyone's having just a good time, and it's like not an uptight vibe. It's not a celebrity-driven vibe. It's kind of like an organic vibe that has a creative background and 60 years of history.
It's certainly home to Robert Del Campo, whose father opened the restaurant after a long career as a dancer. Now, he's been working here since he was a kid. It's also home to Mr. Dan, who's hosting these drag shows in the Underground Theater and has been for the last 28 years. They're both here to talk about the anniversary, what makes Casita del Campo such a special spot to so many. Robert, Mr. Dan, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
Great to be here.
Robert, your dad started this restaurant in 1962, fresh off of a dancing gig in West Side Story. He was a shark, wasn't he?
That is correct. That's exactly right.
How does a dancer decide to go into the restaurant business?
Well, his passion was to be a dancer, and he realized that. And so at the end of his career, like you said, West Side Story was his last film. He had a small business administration pamphlet and just went down the list of businesses. And when he got to restaurant, it's like, I think we can do this. Let's give this a shot. That was, that's what, it's very, you know, practical. It was a very practical solution.
So, all right. Let's go back in time, 1960s, Silver Lake, L.A. What does the scene right. look like then? Who's coming into Casita del Campo?
Well, you know, my dad had that showbiz background, so it was going to be a lot of people from the industry were there. The community itself, which is in Silver Lake, and, you know, back in the 60s, it's essentially what it was like today in terms of very bohemian, very gay, you know, artists, community. It was just with less money. There was just a lot less money back then.
Your dad, Robert, had a reputation for being pretty charming, right? And welcoming everyone to the restaurant.
Talk
a little bit about why that was so important to him.
You know, that's just the way he was in terms of his being, his ability to speak and be happy and make you feel loved and just, you know, like you were at your home, you know. Casita del Campo is our last name. Del Campo and Casita is a little house. So it's an extension of home, and he would make his customers feel that way. But he had that, you know, he was a dancer. So he had that social ability to make conversation and laugh and enjoy life.
Mr. Dan, you started working with the family at a different spot in the 90s. Place called the Drag Strip, is that right?
Actually, the restaurant that the family owned was called Rodolfo's. It was a dance hall restaurant, and people came there to dance. A friend of mine started doing a goth club for teens once a month, and she said, "You got to go meet these people. They're very nice." My best friend Paul V and I went over to meet Rudy Del Campo at Rodolfo's. And we pitched this idea that we wanted to do a dress-up drag party once a month on the second Saturday, and we called it Drag Strip 66, kind of because Rodolfo's is on the old Route 66 route. And we presented live entertainment, not lip-syncing, but if you were going to be on stage, you had to sing, you had to dance, you know, keeping in the tradition of the Del Campo family, you know. This is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
This is not. And it worked.
How did all of that, Mr. Dan, manifest to what you're doing now in the basement at Casita del Campo? I mean, is it what was like, oh, hey, we've got this spot downstairs. We can put something in there.
That's kind of the shorthand of it. Rudy asked us if we would come over to Casita and do something in the cabaret room that had been vacant for a few years because their previous entertainer, whose name was also Rudy, Rudy de la Mora, had moved on to another supper club called the Oz, and it was in Orange County. And they missed having entertainment in the restaurant. So Paul and I came up with this idea that we would invite local musicians and performers from Silver Lake to be on the stage there. We called it the Plush Lounge. And we, as a warm-up act, I came up with this idea to do a 15-minute improvised sketch where Paul played Dr. Lois Heimenstein and would hypnotize me, Gina Loterman. And I would have flashbacks about my family's life, and whatever I would make up, my friends who were improv actors would play out the parts of my family. After 3-4 weeks, an audience that went from 30 people to about 100 people were cramming into this room. So Rudy said, you know what, let's take a break. We've got a basement here. We're going to fix it up for you. And by June of 1994, so that was in October 93 that we started doing the Plush Lounge. And by June of 1994, they had redone the basement. We moved down there. And as part of the plot of the Plush Life, my family, the Lotermans, owned a nightclub called the Cavern Club. So we just called the place we were performing the Cavern Club because, you know, being meta has always been a thing in comedy, to be self-referential. So people were in the place of our business with us telling them our family story. And the Plush Life was a two-act soap opera that had 7 scenes, 3 song parodies, and we had a plot outline, but we improvised all the dialogue. We rehearsed it at 6 p.m. on Saturday night and performed it at 10 p.m. on Saturday nights, the Saturdays that we weren't at Rodolfo's. And it went for 10 years, 210 episodes or something like that. Every episode different, always ongoing. It was so much fun. We met a lot of people along the way that we would put in as guest stars. And we had friends who would do celebrity impersonations. So we would have guest stars like Elizabeth Taylor. And I played Liza Minnelli for a long time, where Liza Minnelli would fall, break her hip, and then pass away every episode that she was in. Kind of like Kenny from South Park. But we would do, it was always topical. We would comment on everything that was happening in the news and all around us in the real world, which is why I said it made it really meta. We would try to shove things in there. Everything from the OJ car chase to, you know, I don't know, terrorist bombings and just dumb movies. Like when Titanic was such a huge hit, you know, we just mocked that for weeks and weeks, and people loved it, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Will your heart go on, Robert, with Casita del Campo for many years? I know you have 4 sons of your own. Is it still a family affair? Do you see this place staying open for a long, long time?
You know, I really do. The goal was to be here to get to 60 years. That was like my goal that I had to. And we're here. You know, we reached it. We're at 60 years now. Yes, it is still in the family. Yes, it is a family-run restaurant. And I do have 4 sons. And some of them feel like they will get there, but they're 14 years old, you know, so only time will tell. But for the foreseeable future, I see green lights. You know, I see this going on as far as I could see, you know. But it's more, you know, you just enjoy the day by day, the day experience now, the love of just being here now without that heavy goal pressure of being another 60 years, you know?
There's a big celebration this weekend, right? To celebrate the 60.
There is. There's going to be a big one. The actual day is May 15th, 1962. And on May 15th, 2022, we're going to do it. We're going to have a band and mariachi and a DJ will be there from KCR. Actually, Jeremy Soule from KCRW will be here. And it's, you know, 12 o'clock to, I don't know, 10 o'clock. It'll be fun.
So an
all-day affair
on Sunday.
All-day affair on Sunday.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Every time I check it out, it's a lot of fun. Mr. Dan, you host a wonderful show downstairs. I want to thank you both for coming on and sharing your stories with us. Congratulations on the anniversary, by the way.
I appreciate that.
Much deserved. Robert Del Campo, Mr. Dan, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us.
All right. Beautiful. Blessings.
Thanks for having us.
By the way, if you'd like to see some pictures of Casita Del Campo back in the day, head on over to our website, kcrw.com/GLA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Teotakis. Checking out now a TikTok.
What is up? This is your LA in a Minute, and I'm here in front of Carney's, the restaurant with an actual Union Pacific train. Jonathan Gold called Carney's one of his 99 essential Los Angeles restaurants. So let's talk about five things you might not have known about Carney's.
That's Evan Lovett from his TikTok series called LA in a Minute. In it, he tells the story of iconic L.A. institutions, including a lot of restaurants like what you just heard, Carney's, the restaurant in a rail car on the Sunset Strip, or in Studio City. It talks about In-N-Out, hamburgers as well, and other restaurants across greater L.A. The series has more than 47,000 followers. Mona Holmes reported on L.A. in a Minute for Eater L.A. She's one of our regulars here, and she joins us now. Hi, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
And Evan Lovitz. The TikToker behind the series is here as well with us. Hey, Evan.
Hi, Steve. Hello, Mona.
Mona, how'd you come across LA in a Minute? What made you want to write about this for Eater LA?
Well, first off, I am TikTok obsessed. And
as many people
when I'm scrolling,
are.
As many as a lot of people are. For those who don't know, TikTok is this short form video app where users create and share anywhere from 15 second to 3 minute videos on just about any subject you can imagine. So like me, when you're scrolling through the app, you can actually like a video, and that eventually gets you closer to a feed that's customized for the things that you like. So naturally, I ended up following up people who seek out restaurants. And then I saw Evan's LA in a Minute, and I knew that something was pretty spectacular.
Evan, where'd you get the idea to do this series, LA in a Minute? I mean, is it just about restaurants? Is it about anything in LA?
So it is definitely not just about restaurants, though those do seem to be some of the more acclaimed or, I guess, sticky episodes that I put together. But the idea came, to tell you the truth, in towards the end of the year last year. My son, he's 8 years old, and like many children, he's addicted to the screen, right? It's tough to tear him away from screen time. So what I started telling him, I'm like, look, you can have screen time, but you have to tell me what you learned. If you didn't learn anything, you can't have screen time tomorrow, right? So combine that with the fact that it was the holidays, and my wife's family, large family, a lot of cousins. She has some younger cousins who I'm always checking in with. Hey, what are the kids up to these days? They're always talking about TikTok. And what they were telling me was like, no, we get our news. We get our news from TikTok. And I'm like, come on. I'm like, you can't get your news from TikTok. But they're like, no, it's really good, blah, blah, blah. They showed it to me. And I was like, you know what? There's something there. And more than anything, I was like, this is kind of important that at least, you know, Generation Z or whatever you want to call them is at least seeking out news and getting news. So combine my love for LA, the fact that I guess, quote unquote, people are reporting news on TikTok, and the fact that I want my son to learn something, I decided on my grandmother's birthday, January 3rd, to launch a TikTok feed that was going to be called LA in a Minute. And the original idea was going to be me with the physical LA Times. You can see some of the original episodes, just essentially going over in 1 minute what happened in Los Angeles, you know, yesterday. You know, today's newspaper is yesterday's news. So going over what happened in Los Angeles and just bringing that to hopefully an appreciative audience. And more importantly, at the time, was for my son to be like, okay, here's what happened in LA yesterday, or here's this, you know, the mayoral race or whatever's going on in Los Angeles. He could learn something. He likes watching his papa. So, you know, it was a little entertaining there.
Let's hear a little bit of that In and Out episode that you did on TikTok.
Today, I want to talk about the oldest fast food chains that originated in Los Angeles. So let's get to it. Coming in at number 10, In-N-Out Burger, 1948, Baldwin Park, where Esther and Harry Snyder created a two-way speaker box to help you save time and help them save money.
So there you go. You learned something about In-N-Out. They've been around for a long time. They're venerable all across the Southland. They've expanded, obviously, to other parts of California and even other parts of the West. What do you think's made it so successful?
Look, In-N-Out, you could taste the freshness. I don't want to sound like an ad for the company, but it's true. The tomatoes are perfect. The hand-leafed iceberg lettuce has the perfect crispy crunch when you bite into it to complement the rich, juicy patties that are never frozen. I mean, the bun has that nice element of a little bit of crunch, kind of that al dente type feeling when you bite into it, with the soft doughy inside and just the burger together with the special sauce. And the customization, you can get grilled onions, raw onions, mustard, pepperoncinis, animal style.
I mean, fast food, though, does have a home in Southern California. Obviously, a lot of places got their start in Southern California. You got McDonald's in San Bernardino, right? You got, what is it, Carl's Jr., I think. You've got Taco Bell, I think, is based in Orange County. I mean, there are a lot of different fast food chains that are based here in Southern California. Mona, do you have any favorite episodes from the series?
I do, actually. I mean, one of the things that drew me into Evan's series, I just learned something new every time I click on one of his videos. Not only about restaurants, but about Los Angeles. I grew up here, so I have a soft spot for these places. You know, just like Evan, he grew up in the Valley. So his series taught me about the rise and fall of Pioneer Chicken, which had hundreds of locations throughout Los Angeles and Indonesia. He taught me how the Wiener Schnitzel's very distinct sign at that hot dog restaurant is very intentional. And it helped them stand out from passersby and keep loiterers from hanging out in the parking lot. Or even the history of Ralph's. All of these places either I have gone to since my childhood or still go to.
If I may step in for a second, I want to kind of specifically highlight one of my favorite episodes, Fatburger, which was founded by Lovey Yancey in the 1940s. And, you know, Fatburger being, again, an LA institution, whether it's Magic Johnson purchasing a majority share in the 90s or being rapped about by Notorious B.I.G. More important than that is Lovey Yancey was an African-American female pioneering, no pun intended to go back to the Pioneer Chicken, but she owned a fast food, a hamburger stand when this is pre-civil rights, where you're thinking about this is really a landmark occasion, and to take it to the heights that it eventually became, like, that's really significant.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on and talking about it. The series is called LA in a Minute. It's on TikTok. Evan Lovett, the guy behind it. Evan, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate this opportunity, and thank you, Mona.
Mona Holmes reports for Eater LA. Mona, much love. Thank you, Mona.
Thank you both.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Last month, KCRW's Young Creators Project found five talented musicians and songwriters. You may have heard their work on Morning Becomes Eclectic. Well, April was National Poetry Month. And after dozens of submissions, KCRW has now found five talented young poets and storytellers. We're going to hear from them and their work over the next few days here on Greater LA and on KCRW's Morning Edition. And I'm joined now by one of these young creators. Her name is Jillian Chamberlain. She's 17 years old, a senior at California School of the Arts in the San Gabriel Valley.
And she doesn't just write poetry, by the way. She's also a filmmaker. She's also a musician. And earlier this year, she was named one of the top 20 teen artists in the U.S. by the Young Arts Competition for a film that she made called The Dinner Party. So she's got a lot going on. She's going to read one of her poems now. But before she does, I just want to let you know that it does have some strong themes that might make some folks uncomfortable. So here's Jillian Chamberlain reading her poem, Darling.
I'll give you everything. I'll cough up my pearls, the ones that had grown in my belly. And I know that when I see them, they'll be stained with blood. I'll smile at you, my gap-toothed smile, and I'll spit them into your hand. You'll pat me on the head and stroke my cheek. You created those little pellets of beauty from nothing but waste. You threw dirt in my eyes. You rang my neck in the shower curtain, and you counted the seconds as my head submerged in the kitchen sink, inhaling the food that had clogged the drain. And when your hands loosened and my head rose, the peas and the carrots clung to me. They clung to my hair like gems. And just like that, a piece of sand had been shoved down my throat, a little piece of your pain. And it sat in my belly until a pearl, the size of my thumb, parted the pathways of flesh, climbed out of my chest just to rest in your palm. Oh, I love you, darling. I love you, oh, so much.
Tell me a little bit about Darling. I mean, when did you write it? What was the initial inspiration for it? Because there are some pretty heavy themes in it.
Yeah, so I actually wrote this, I'd say roughly around a month ago. So it's a pretty fresh poem. And when I start writing poetry, oftentimes I take on a persona. So for this poem, at least, I started off with just kind of this image of this woman. And she had a desperation about her and she had an attitude. But I feel like what intrigued me most about her was her strength. I kind of admired her for that. She, this woman in this poem, she does things that I don't think a lot of us could do. She destroys herself and she withstands so much abuse that I don't think a lot of people could take. And though she is in this position that is very vulnerable and very cruel, I think there's another aspect to her that I think is what really intrigues me, which is how strong you would have to be to be in her position and to still be alive and functional.
So you're thinking of these things, you're 17 years old and it's like, you know, your life, I mean, to a lot of us, your life is just kind of beginning, right?
Yeah.
That kind of depth and gravitas about what people are going through and destroying themselves and things like, where does that come from?
I'm really interested in exploring dysfunction through my writing. I feel like it helps me untangle a lot of what confuses me or intrigues me about aspects of human instincts or people or relationships.
I'm going to ask you this question and I don't even know where it's going to go from here, but what do you want to be when you grow up? It seems like you're already grown up by this conversation. What do you want to do next? You want to keep doing this stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I can really only see myself pursuing, some type of career in storytelling. I'm really attracted to film right now because it can really integrate all the mediums that I work with. Like a lot of my scripts, I do integrate my poetry into them because I can either do it directly or I can do it in the stage directions. And I feel like because I imagine like these narratives that I'm telling so visually, films just kind of fit the bill where I can, oh my God, I combine all these different elements and I can kind of create them and mold them into hopefully this beautiful thing that can really connect with people. But I would say I just want to be a storyteller, whatever that entails.
Well, you certainly have a bright path in front of you. It's wonderful work. Jillian Chamberlain, poet, who joined us as part of KCRW's Young Creators Project. You can watch her perform, by the way, you can watch her perform her poem called Darling at our website, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Jillian, thank you for coming on and talking to us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
By the way, KCRW's Young Creators Project continues for the month of May. The focus is visual arts. We're going to be accepting submissions all month long, so be sure to check it out at kcrw.com/youngcreators.
Well, that's all the time we have for this evening. Join us tomorrow. Voting has begun. Mail-in ballots are out all across L.A. County. How and where to vote on tomorrow's show ahead of the June 7th election. And we'll also look at the 3rd District Supervisor's race and some other races up for grabs as well. Join us online anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Hear any story from Greater L.A. Share your thoughts with us. Give us some story ideas as well. kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Rebecca Ludden, and Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands and ears on this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.